Hi, readers. Welcome to Books Connect Us from Penguin Random House. This is a podcast about staying connected with each other and the stories and authors who inspire us. Wendy Benchley is a marine and environmental conservation advocate and former councilwoman of New Jersey. Her husband, Peter Benchley, was the famed author of Jaws, the classic suspense novel of Shark vs. Man, which was made into the blockbuster Steven Spielberg movie. The Jaws phenomenon changed popular culture and continues to inspire a growing interest in sharks and the ocean today. Wendy Benchley joins our producer, Pat Stango, to discuss the legacy of Jaws, how its story still resonates in the events of today, and why ocean conservation is something she still fights for.
So, hello and welcome to Books Connect Us. Thanks for joining us, and thank you for joining us, our guest today, Wendy Benchley. She is a environmental conservation advocate, a former councilwoman from New Jersey. And Wendy, though, for our book audience, you also have a very special relationship to one of the most classic books in recent times, 1974's Jaws. So Wendy, could you just tell our audience, if they don't already know, what is your relationship to the book Jaws?
Well, it was my husband, Peter Benchley, who wrote Jaws 45 years ago. Yeah.
Wow, that's incredible. So, and Jaws is a book that, I mean, I know personally, I read it probably when I was like high school age, but yeah. It is definitely a book that people are still rereading and reading for the first time today. Why do you think that this book has endured these last 40 years? Why are people still coming to it?
Well, you know, Peter was I thought he was a great writer, very plot driven. And sharks are fascinating creatures. And Peter was fascinated in sharks, and he was also fascinated in character development. So for me, and I think for many people, the book has great staying power because, yes, it's about a shark and about a shark that hangs around and terrorizes a town. But even more so, it's about the reaction of the people in Amity and how they cope with this danger that they can't control, that they can't really see. And well, they could have controlled it by just plain staying out of the water. But, you know, people want to get in that water and swim. So, you know, I think that the plot was a fascinating one. And human beings love our monsters. Human beings are fascinated by that kind of danger. I think it probably goes back to all of our evolutionary preparation to run from lions or swim away from sharks. So I think there's just that kind of fascination too. This is a real danger, a real animal in the ocean that can cause you harm. Of course, now we know that sharks, when they bite, it's a test bite, and 99% of the time they swim away. But if that bite hit you in a bad place, then you could die. So so they are dangerous to human beings, but we are in their territory. So we have to remember that.
So something you said there, I think, really made me think of what we're going through today, which is you talking about how Jaws is about the people. And you know, both the book and the movie, a big thing about the characters is we see how their personal flaws and their personal problems really put them in even more danger than they would have been naturally.
Yes.
So, yes. I mean, do you see any parallels between the story and the characters of Jaws and maybe some of what we're going through right now as a society?
Yes, very much so. I was going to bring that up because it's quite fascinating, and there have been a few articles written about COVID and what we're going through now and how people react to this COVID virus that is unseen, hard to control, very, very mysterious and terrifying. And everybody, as we can see with our friends and neighbors in the country, reacts in a different way to this crisis. There are some people who really approach it with a scientific understanding. And there are other people, I will not name that person, who is the head of the country, who has not approached it with good scientific data. So in the book, you can see those kinds of reactions going on in this small town. The mayor, who actually has gotten involved with the mafia and owes the mafia a lot of money.
It's amazing the parallels you could draw today.
It is, yeah.
A corrupt mayor who tells people to go back into the water.
Go back into the water. We need to keep the economy going.
Yeah, I don't know.
We've heard that before. Where have we heard that? So, and then there's the scientist Hooper, Hooper to me is a really fascinating character because he's a little bit arrogant in his knowledge of sharks. And so he feels that he is going to be safe with this shark in the water and is a little bit too arrogant as a scientist. But just as a sidelight, after the book and the movie, Peter got hundreds, thousands of letters from people who wanted to go into marine biology because of Hooper and how exciting it was for him to be a scientist out on the ocean studying sharks. And they realized that the ocean was an exciting place and they didn't have to be in a lab to be a scientist. They could be out exploring. And then back to Brody, the police chief, who was frightened of the ocean to begin with and was, you know, trying to balance all these different forces, which is what every governor and mayor has been doing during this COVID crisis. So it is pretty fascinating to see all of these reactions to COVID parallel in Jaws.
Yeah, it's definitely something I've noticed a lot just even on social media these last 6 months. Like Jaws is one of those touchstones that seems to keep coming up. You know, there's certain, obviously like disease movies, like Contagion that people talk about, but Jaws is right up there as one that people keep saying, oh, it's just like the mayor and it's just like,
you've been hearing the invisible monster.
Oh, definitely. Yeah.
Yeah. So interesting. Well, you know, I think that Jaws hit a chord all around the world. I mean, Peter received letters from people in landlocked countries who knew nothing about the ocean, but we do have our Jungian unconsciousness that is, I believe, in all the unconsciousness of all human beings, where we understand monsters and the whole thought of being eaten is one of the most terrifying ones.
Yes.
But may I just say that when Peter wrote the book, he did a lot of research on sharks, and there was not much known. It was very much anecdotal evidence about how they behaved, and so when he wrote the book, he did what he thought was realistic shark behavior. And then years later, as we learned more and more about sharks, Peter realized that, you know, the book, he would not write the same kind of book again. But I think it's sort of interesting to look back on how Peter came to the idea of Jaws. He was speech writing for President Johnson, a very minor speech writer, but still pretty fascinating to be down there for a couple of years. The last 2 years of Johnson's presidency. And then when he didn't run for office, Peter decided to try freelance writing. So we moved to Pennington, New Jersey, and it was very iffy trying to make enough money for me and two children. I was not working at the time. Peter had two ideas for a book, one about a great white shark that hung around the community and caused a lot of chaos, and then another about pirates. And Roberta Pryor was his agent, and she put him in touch with Doubleday, Tom Congdon, and then also Kate Medina, So they gave Peter $1,000 and said, okay, write the book. And Peter started out writing it as a comedy or with comic elements in
okay.
it. Yeah.
Interesting. Because, was the shark still a major threat in that version?
Yeah,
or?
Yeah, okay. The shark was a threat, but still there was a lot of humor in the book because mm-hmm. Peter had a great sense of humor and he loved, I mean, you know, he just loved putting humor in things. But Tom Condon suggested that you can't have humor and this great adventure story all in one. So back Peter went and he had only done a few chapters of the book. Mm-hmm. But so he went back and worked actually in the Pennington furnace repair shop was where he found an office because our little house was pretty chaotic with two little children in it. Uh-huh. And he preferred the clanging of these furnaces being repaired and made. That he could block out easier than the cries of children.
That's a lot about kids.
Yeah, yeah. So he wrote Jaws there, and then Doubleday, you know, Doubleday, Tom Congdon, and Doubleday did a great job promoting it with Richard Zanuck and David Brown, and they promoted the book and the movie together, which, as mm-hmm. we know now, created one of the, I guess it was the first summer blockbuster.
Was the, you know, the iconic image that people know as the cover of the book and the cover of the movie, you know, just with that shark at the bottom of the ocean staring up and the typeface at the top, was that the original cover of the book?
Like, yeah.
And do you
the gray
remember
one. The gray and black one?
Yes. Yeah. Do you yeah. remember what both yourself and Peter thought the first time maybe you saw that image? Because I kind of feel like seeing that for the first time is almost like a light switch going off.
Yeah, that was, I thought it, that was a brilliant cover. And I always preferred that cover to the one that they used for the movie and the paperback.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
With the snaggle teeth, those are not great white shark teeth. but they just took a little liberty. Mm-hmm. As they did with the movie, you know, they made the shark 10 feet bigger than any great white shark would ever be in order to give a little more drama and mm-hmm. To the movie.
Well, would it, speaking of the movie, because I mean, the book is on its own, obviously a classic, but then when coupled with being adapted into, I mean, pretty much, yeah, one of the most famous movies of all time, and, you know, like the book, a movie that people keep watching over and over again. So what was yours and Peter's relationship to the movie? You know, what did you think when all that was first happening?
Yeah.
What were some of your thoughts when you first saw the movie itself?
Yeah. Well, you know, we were so lucky, really extraordinarily lucky. Who would ever think that a book about a fish would go on to be this extraordinary movie? And the book itself, you know, the paperback was at number one for many, many months. I think Spielberg did an excellent job with the movie. You know, he cut out some of the subplots and just had a driving adventure tale. He was a genius that way. And he always said, with that movie, I realized I had to have what he called a screamer every 20 minutes in order to keep people on edge and keep it going. And so he actually did that scene of the head falling down into the bottom of the boat when Hooper is in the water and he looks up with the flashlight. That was done in a swimming pool of Verna Field, the editor for the movie, and stuck in later because Spielberg felt that there weren't enough scary scenes to really keep people on edge for when the shark finally makes its big appearance at the stern of the boat. So I think, I know Peter had many suggestions to Spielberg. He felt that that the shark was too large, unrealistic, that a shark does not have revenge in its little brain. It does not purposely go after people. So I know Peter tried to to talk to Stephen and to tone that part of the movie down. But Peter is also very sophisticated. Both his grandfather and his father were writers. He understood that when you sell a book to the movies, you have to sort of give it up. You know, mm-hmm. it's the director's and the producer's story then. So he understood that a movie is different than the book, and thought that Spielberg really did a brilliant job.
Yeah, and it's just one of those things that'll, the book and the movie will just always help keep each other in the consciousness.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
Someone will discover one first and then go to the other. You know, yes. Like I know personally, I read the book after seeing the movie as a kid, you know, and I'm sure
really?
It goes back and forth. Yeah.
Because my
parents watched it with them when I was a kid, and then right away, there's a book of this too. Well, perfect. Let's go.
Yeah, very interesting. Well, I it's quite intriguing, isn't it, that Jaws is now a family film.
Yes. I was probably shown it too young.
Yeah, I say to people, don't let your young children watch this movie. But I think nowadays kids see so many different kinds of monster movies that they just don't take it that personally to heart. And the movie and the book, I know the book really created this great interest in shark research and in the oceans and got a lot of people fascinated in the ocean again and wanting to learn more. So, mm-hmm. so that was very gratifying for Peter to receive all letters.
Well, and actually, we should talk about that in terms of your own life. Do you feel like yourself and Peter became even more interested in the ocean, in environmental conservation, in a way that you hadn't been maybe before, after Jaws came out and changed your life?
After Jaws, we were just so lucky because it opened the world of the ocean to us. I had always been involved in environmental issues, and Peter also, but this was completely new for us to be out on the ocean learning about sharks with scientists and other writers. And we quickly saw and learned about the long lining, the overfishing, pollution, shark finning, all of these really terrible things happening in the ocean. And so we did a lot of work on ocean conservation issues. I was a board member of Environmental Defense Fund. Peter was a spokesperson for EDF. We did lots of talks together. Peter wrote articles for National Geographic and many other magazines. And it was very distressing to us that people took Jaws as some kind of a license to kill. Mm-hmm. And to go out and be a macho shark fisherman. It's pretty easy to catch sharks, quite honestly. It doesn't take much talent. So we worked hard to try to cut back on shark finning and also on the shark tournaments. I don't know how much you want to go into what's happening today in the world with sharks, but it's pretty
I was going to say, I was going to ask, have you seen in all your years as being a environmental activist, have you been seeing progress? Have you been seeing change over the years? Like, do you feel like people have taken to your message, governments have, you know, in what ways have you seen change over these decades?
I think, especially in the last 10 or 15 years, there has been a huge upsurge in governments and NGOs and scientists, in all the research and the understanding that the oceans are absolutely essential for life on this planet, and a healthy ocean is essential. You know, climate change is really the threat to the planet, and the ocean absorbs the carbon and also gives us oxygen, 50% of the oxygen we breathe. And in order to have a healthy ocean, you've got to have a healthy animal ecosystem. And sharks are the apex predators, which keep the ocean in balance. So Peter and I both worked for, and I continue to work for, a group called Wild Aid. They're based in San Francisco, and they have been the leading voice in educating Asian countries, especially China, about shark fin soup and how many sharks, 100 million a year, are killed just mainly for shark fin soup. Also, a lot are killed on long lines and also for meat. But shark finning, I think, has been the most damaging for sharks around the world. So Wild Aid, through their education campaigns with Jackie Chan and Yao Ming and Maggie Q in China, have actually reduced the demand for shark fin soup by 85%. So, I you know, people around the world, once they understand what they're eating, are very willing to change their habits, change their cultural norms, and it's been wonderful to see. So there's still a lot more work to do, but I think also the world has realizes that we need to have many, many more marine protected areas in the ocean in order to keep the biomass of fish going. They've got to have some safe place where they can propagate and grow larger. So that is happening. We're up to maybe, 3 or 4% of the ocean. And now people, the UN, are looking at the high seas and trying to do some kind of protections for the high seas to increase the biomass of fish in the ocean.
It's great to hear that people are changing their habits. People are listening and learning new things. And it definitely seems like having that, the power of your name, your husband's name, of the Jaws name, at least is an entry point for a lot of people to sit up and listen. Because
I hope
something.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah, I hope so. You know, as you're talking, I was just thinking about all the different reactions to Jaws. And the one that just made Peter and me laugh, was the one from Castro. Mankiewicz was with Castro in Cuba. And Castro was reading Jaws, and Mankiewicz said, "Why are you reading Jaws?" And Castro said, "I think this book is the best book about the corruption of capitalism that I have ever read." Isn't that great?
Yeah.
So books, can have all kinds of meanings to different people at different times, which is one of the great wonders of books.
Right. Yeah, it's it is the sign of a great story where you can see different villains depending on who you are and how you want to read it. But I think, a great thing about Jaws is that, the bad versions of a story like that are purely the ones where it's a monster, and the characterizations. There's this one monster, and all the humans are kind of like stiff, heroic. And what's great about Jaws is that there's a little bit of sort of the monster in everybody.
Yeah.
There's every right. everyone has their flaws, including the shark.
Yeah. Well, I'm intrigued that you went back to read the book after seeing the movie, because did you find it really interesting to see all the subplots and the different way that Peter approached it?
I did, and like I said, I had seen the movie probably a little too young when I was a kid, and then as soon as I heard there was a book, went to read it, and it was also one of those first times where I read saw a movie and read a book and saw that they weren't going to be exactly the same thing. So even just seeing the fact that there were those differences was so interesting.
Yeah.
Just seeing what goes into a movie adaptation that you
cutting
down, you know, you need to, I guess, cut down some of the stories because the movie is only 2 hours, and a book like Jaws, you could take your time reading it.
Yes. Yeah. So I think after Jaws, you know, Peter went right on and wrote more books, The Island and The Deep, and again, did a lot of research for those books. So I think they're just absolutely fascinating. And then Peter's favorite book was The Girl of the Sea of Cortez. And that's about a young Mexican girl who befriends a beautiful, huge, giant manta ray, and about the conflict with her brother, because her brother wants to kill the mantas, because mantas do disrupt their fishing line, sometimes get caught in them. And so it's a really, I think, beautiful book about the relationship that you can have with sea creatures, that especially gentle, beautiful sea creatures like mantas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a wide breadth of characters that seem to be out there in the ocean, and Peter definitely explored a lot of them.
Yeah, we were lucky. It was really wonderful, and he enjoyed, and really felt so fortunate that he could not only get out on the ocean and have explorations and learn, but also keep writing. And he did many, many freelance articles also about the ocean to try to educate people. So it was a rich, full life.
Yeah. And so, Wendy, before we go, what are, you know, some of the things that you're working on now? Or, yeah, and I guess also, how has the situation we've been in, you know, the sort of quarantine life that we've been leading this year, how has that affected your ability to keep advocating for these issues and, you know, connecting with people?
We know how it goes. One Zoom meeting after another, you know, oh boy. But I've gotten very used to them now. For a while, it felt so sort of distant. Mm-hmm. So I do a lot of work with WildAid on shark finning, elephant tusks, rhino horns, endangered animal work. And that's been pretty fascinating, because the pangolin was perhaps the intermediary host for the COVID virus. I also work with a group called Beneath the Waves, and Austin Gallagher is the CEO and the main scientist there. And he's doing great work in the Bahamas with marine protected areas, and in fact has done such excellent work that the government of Turks and Caicos Islands have asked him to come and do the science needed in order to create a marine protected area around the Turks and Caicos Islands too, which would be really fabulous. We need a lot more protection along in the Atlantic. Many of the Pacific Island nations have done absolutely fabulous job with marine protected areas. And actually, I last year before COVID, I was able to go to a place called Rajampat in Indonesia, to Misul Eco Resort, where they have a marine protected area that has increased the biomass 250% in 6 years. And it was absolutely so beautiful. It is the way the ocean used to be all through the Pacific. So the ocean can revive and come back if we give it a chance. So I've been, as I say, just working through Zoom with these issues, doing some talks through Zoom, doing a podcast like I am with you. I'm realizing that I need to get even more professional and maybe have my slides up behind me, mm-hmm. so I can go click, click and do that. I've done that a couple of times. So I'm getting more technologically up to speed here.
You never, like a shark, you got to never stop moving.
Never stop moving, right.
Yeah. It is interesting. One of the things it seems you touch on a lot is having these areas where we're not encroaching on the sea life, not encroaching on the animals. And,
right.
you know, when we look at something like the situation we're in, that to me sticks out as a big theme is we need to figure out how to not take over all of this space that the, you know, animal life, wildlife, sea life, you know, maybe needs to have to themselves.
That is absolutely the essence of the problem. We are not giving other animals on this planet enough space to live. And there are going to be more and more of these diseases coming through animals to us. So it behooves us to leave some forest, leave enough jungle, leave enough plains, leave enough ocean to have a healthy planet. Even if we just look at it selfishly for our own health, now we know it's right. really important for our own health. Very good point.
Yeah.
Good
and point. That's the best way to get through to people is to make them look at it selfishly. Let's stay out of the water. Let's leave, give Jaws some space.
Give Jaws some space. Oh, please let the ocean survive. And it gives us great pleasure. It gives us food. It gives us oxygen. It gives us a healthy planet. So truly important. Now, I have one wild story that I could tell if you still have time.
I always have time for a wild story. So Wendy, what is your wild story?
My wild story is when you were asking about after Jaws, what our life was like. And we had fun as well as did scientific expeditions. And our first fun trip was to go to South Australia, Dangerous Reef, to dive with the great whites. American sportsmen, ABC American sportsmen, asked Peter to go down there and said, okay, big fella, now that you've written this book about a shark, you want to go swim with a real one? And Peter said, how could I refuse? So we went down to South Australia. Now, this was in, you know, the very beginning of shark diving in cages. And Rodney Fox had developed a cage. We got to the boat. There was a half a horse hanging off the stern. That was the bait for the shark. They had a couple cages hanging by, attached with ropes off the stern. Peter got into one. And because it was Australia in the 70s, I was a woman, the only woman on board, and I was banished to the upper deck. Because that was Australia. I also was not allowed in any bars in the,
Jeez.
You know. Yeah, can you believe it?
Times have changed, and luckily.
How they changed, luckily, right. So I was on the upper deck. Peter gets into the cage. There was a beautiful female great white shark, and the females are bigger than the males. And she came up to take a bite of this horse and missed the horse and got the line, the rope, caught in her teeth. It didn't cut down and break the rope. It just got caught in between her teeth. So she was basically trapped by this rope and absolutely desperate to get free. So she whipped around back and forth, pulled Peter and the cage under the boat, and then came back out again. And Peter was topsy-turvy. I was up top, screaming at the cameraman down below, get the rope out of the shark's mouth, for heaven's sweet sake.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, I said different words than that, but. And
thanks for cleaning it up here.
Right, right. And they, of course, were behind their cameras and thought it was great action, sort of. They, you know, they weren't connecting. So I came down from the top deck, elbowed my way through the guys. When the shark came up again and opened her mouth to take another bite, I grabbed the line, jerked it out of her mouth. The shark was free. All was well. Peter stayed under the water for another half an hour. And when he came up, he said, whoa, that was wild. What happened in the beginning? Anyway, I was the heroine for the day.
Oh, my God. So you saved the author of Jaws from a shark attack.
Right, right.
Well, I don't think we're going to be able to top that one. So I think that is, anytime someone gives you an I fought a shark story, I think that's usually what you have to end on.
Yeah.
So thank you very much, Wendy Benchley, for joining us. And everyone, if for some reason you haven't already, of course, go read Jaws right now.
Thank you, Pat. I enjoyed it very much.
Thank you for listening to Books Connect Us. For more great book recommendations and information about your favorite authors, feel free to follow Penguin Random House on social media or visit penguinrandomhouse.com. And if you've enjoyed what you've heard, go ahead and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, as it helps more listeners to find our show. This podcast is produced by Pat Stango and edited by Clayton Gumbert. I've been Erin Leaf, and until next time, this has been Books Connect Us.